Hi, and welcome to today's episode of Teen Health Matters. This is Dr. Jacqueline Duget from the Howard County Health Department, and I have my two co-hosts with me today, Patrick Keefe and Grace Leachman, and they're going to interview Dr. Jeff Bostic. He was a child psychiatrist at MedStar Georgetown Hospital, and today's topic, we're going to talk about stress.
All right, awesome. Thank you, Jackie. So I'm Patrick Keefe, and I'm here with Grace Leachman. And like Dr. Duget said, we are discussing stress today. So Grace, what do you perceive as stress?
I mean, stress is anything that makes you feel anxious. I mean, we all deal with stress every day. It's something you might not be looking forward to something, or something you might be nervous about something. But it happens when, you know, you've got this negative thing in the future, or you're really excited for this thing in the future. And it's a total normal aspect of life. You need stress to trigger a response to something that happens. But I think, as we find in a common teenager's life, stress is very prevalent and sometimes almost too prevalent.
Yeah, I agree. No, stress in a teen's life, it definitely is a driving force, you know, whether it's finishing an assignment or just having to get through the day. What do you perceive to be factors of stress? For me, it's, you know, like I said earlier, it's schoolwork, trying to deal with everything at once, trying to multitask. It's mostly just putting it on myself.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is self-inflicted in teens, of the amount of stuff that we do, the after-school activities. You've got sports, you've got competitions, all the homework, and trying to fit it all into a small amount of time really, really can create some stress.
Yeah, definitely. So we're going to jump right into the interview. We have today Dr. Jeff Bostic. Doctor, how are you doing? Thank you for joining us.
I'm doing good, Patrick and Grace. Thanks for including me.
Oh, thank you. So, starting right off the bat, do you think teens face an abnormal amount of stress?
Yes. We think that the amount of stress that teenagers experience now is increasing. We see now that they are pretty much atop the list, except that we're starting to see now that as teenagers go into early adulthood, that stress perception persists with them more so than we've seen in previous times in history.
So does the amount of stress that teenagers experience, is that unhealthy for their development?
Absolutely. You know, your brain is basically ready for anything, put you in any kind of environment, and so we would wish that people would be happy and they would enjoy all the wonderful things that are afforded them by being on this planet. But really, your brain is primed to look for trouble. And here's our real quagmire. We live now in a circumstance where you have so much exposure through all types of media, news media, social media, that there's perpetually things out there that your brain is like, uh-oh, this could be a problem. And because of your propensity to look for trouble, that increases the amount of stress that you feel, but it also makes your brain more prone to look for trouble and stay in kind of a negative state. It's called the negativity bias, which is literally just research that shows that given a good thing and a bad thing, your brain will first see the negative thing, which makes sense from an evolutionary perspective. You're not paying attention to the tiger that's in the bush. You get eaten, game over. Your life is over. But most of the time, your life is pretty good and you don't really have tigers in the bushes waiting to eat you. But these days, when we can see every, you know, few minutes something through media, for example, that exposes us to risks of getting shot at school, even though that's less now than it was 30 years ago, or that something bad is going to happen, our brain like is then kind of conditioned to be looking for trouble. So teens live in a time now where we've really struggled with figuring out what's the appropriate media diet as well as like food diet. Too much exposure to negative things is not compatible with the way that the brain actually best works.
So would you consider that the amount of stress teens have right now, would you say it's warranted based on all the effects of, you know, whether media, food, just society in general?
Well, you know, it's hard to say. I mean, even though we live in an absolutely really good time, most of us are not struggling daily to find something to eat, as we hear our grandparents or great-grandparents talk about. Most of us are really not in grave danger most of the time, but it doesn't necessarily feel like that. And I'm not just talking about true dangers and true threats. The biggest source of stress, you know, among teenagers is school. And that's both like worrying about a test, but it's also worrying about the next phases of like, am I going to get into a good school? Will I be able to live the kind of lifestyle to which I've been accustomed? Will I be able to be, you know, something that will be pleasing to my parents and get along well? So we know that the pressure from school, not that it's intended to be pressure and make us feel bad, But the challenges of that, you know, are such that we worry about that probably more than anything. And then family stuff comes up second as far as kind of the biggest thing that teens worry about. And then right after that is like romantic relationships and peer things. And these have, you know, significant effects on your daily life and functioning.
Since every teen has to go to school and will obviously be stressed out by school at some point, do you have any tips for teens that might be feeling stressed out because of something like school?
Well, absolutely. And school's not intended to be like a stressful, painful, let's condition you for disaster kind of experience. But the reality is because our brains are there again, ready for looking for trouble, it's like you have to like do the opposite, which is look for good stuff. And we know this from, this will be funny, I hope, to you. We know this from what systems research. So marriages, for example. In marriages, we know that if they're going to be successful, you basically have to say nice things to your partner about 3 to 5 times for every negative complaint that you say to your partner, or else that marriage is more prone to end a divorce or to fall apart. Similarly, in organizations that work well, where people stay with the same company, they don't leave, we know that that ratio is probably, again, at least 3, but probably closer to 5 to 7 good things you hear from your boss than you hear negative things. So practicing doing that is real important, because even though your daily life, if I were to make you say, what were the 20 things that happened to you yesterday, either Patrick or Grace, if I asked you to do that, you'd probably say somewhere between 10 and 18 were positive things, well over half. But the things that most of us remember and that we think about when we get ready to go to sleep at night are those negative things. So concretely, it's really vital to look at the good things that happened during the day and take stock of those and go, yeah, this really works. So our joke in this is to, quote, evaluate all the evidence around, like, I had a good day or a bad day. Too often we come back and go, yeah, today was really an awful day. This bad thing happened. And it's like, well, wait a minute, what else happened? And then you find that there were 6 good things that happened, you know, with friends or academics, and, you know, you did well on other tests or whatever. So you have to be really mindful of attuning to the good things so that they register and your brain holds on to them rather than looks for the next uh-oh vulnerability, likely problem that you're going to have. So that's a huge thing in all this.
So do you think that the mindset teens are getting in right now, you know, being prepared for stress, just expecting it, do you think that's preparing them for the real world?
Well, it's not in the real world that any of us are going to live in. That is, we're going to want to live and want to create for our children a world that will be less stressful. So concretely, again, there are very specific things that we can do. So, you know, 50 years ago, people didn't worry about having too much to eat. They worried about having enough to eat. These days, your generation, you're more prone to have a problem with overeating than having a lack of access to food. And exactly the same thing is true with, again, media. We have 50 channels now instead of 3 to watch television. Well, the point is that a little bit of television, just like a little bit of chocolate cake, is good. But if you eat the whole chocolate cake, that's what leads to obesity. If you watch some television, and we know that some of it actually decreases stress for people, watching like small amounts, like 30 minutes of cartoons for kids or sitcoms and stuff for older people, that actually diminishes stress. But watching 3+ hours a day is associated with really nothing good, certainly in the young developing category. So again, specifically, it's very helpful if people say, wait a minute, let's recognize the world in which we live right now, and let's recognize that an overabundance of media or an overabundance of like negative things is what we want to get away from. And this isn't really as hard as it sounds. We know what's helpful to do. What's helpful to do, what makes humans happy, and that's what we don't think about perhaps enough, is you're not born destined to be happy. Even if something goofy happens, you get unhappy. It's like your brain develops to be happy if you do happy stuff, and you get unhappy if you do unhappy stuff. So it's like we really have to build in doing happy stuff. So again, very specifically, exercise. You know, we joke about that. Everybody should exercise. But we know it does the exact same thing to your brain as antidepressant medications. It turns on a gene that repairs the cells in your brain so that you can both form new healthy brain tracts that lay down for happy stuff. We also know that you have to practice being grateful. You got to do it 3 times a week or you don't get proficient at it. You got to practice being forgiven. So again, those kind of like things are associated with happiness. Connectivity, doing good things for other people, altruism. If you practice doing those things and you embed those in your daily life from the time you're 5 to 25, that's what your brain's going to be conditioned to do. So you really want to establish those kind of practices kind of throughout your daily life and amidst school. And, of course, we're trying increasingly to be attentive to that in school so it doesn't feel so much just like I got to learn trig this semester and I've got to learn, you know, geometry next semester. It's like, wait a minute, how does this stuff apply and will make your life, like, useful down the road? So we're trying to, like, move some of these things in directions that are more compatible with, like, positive brain growth and health.
You'd mentioned before how the increased use of media has kind of correlated into the rise of stress in teens. How would you say something like social media, always being connected to our phones and to the internet, what part do you think that's played in the teens and the high levels of stress?
Well, on the one hand, we're grateful to be able to access our friends and know what's going on with them rather than to write letters and wait for a week until we hear back from them, particularly if they don't live right around us. So there's a good aspect to it. These things are not necessarily good or bad. But what we really see right now, and we all see this, is you see literally families that sit around the dinner table and every person is on their device. That's not helpful. I'll use my bad metaphor here. You can kiss your cell phone and you can kiss someone who is your age when you're 16 or 17, and I can assure you that there's an appreciable difference when you do the real thing, a real human being in the same room, versus the device. And so the point is the devices have a place where they're helpful, but they're not the end all. And right now they're probably used a little bit too much. And the other concrete aspect that we see with that is if you're on media, social media specifically, you're away from real life encounters, and it may intrude with other aspects of your life to be happy and to be healthy, specifically sleep. It takes about 2 hours for your brain to kind of like turn down after you've been looking at screens, be it your cell phone screen, your iPad screen, or your TV screen. So when you try to go to sleep, but you've been on your phone for the previous, you know, hour or so, your brain's not going to be easily able to go to sleep, and then you're going to get less sleep. And we know that for teenagers specifically, if you're getting less than 9 hours of sleep per night, which admittedly lots of high school students get less than that because of their fears about school, we know that that impedes brain development, again, in a healthy way. So that screen time can also interfere kind of like in a peripheral, indirect kind of way as well as directly with their social encounters.
Hello, Kubo.
What have you got planned for today?
Come on, this way.
Adventure can be found anywhere, but the best place to start is in the forest.
It's the most powerful magic there is.
Head outside to discover incredible animals.
Wow.
And beautiful plants that come together to create an unforgettable adventure. So grab your loved ones and explore a world of possibilities. Visit discovertheforest.org to find the closest forest or park to you. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the U.S. Forest Service.
Most of my family, they never graduated high school, so I'm trying to break that barrier.
My daughter, Brooklyn, was also a motivation for me to go back to school. Every day after work, went straight to school, and it paid off.
At age 26, Kareem finished his high school diploma.
I could not have done it alone. I see the future is really bright for me.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Now, earlier you mentioned the 3-to-1 statistic for every one negative thing you want, 3 positive things.
Uh-huh.
Now, say during a day a teen, you know, doesn't really have that ratio going on, what are some broad ideas that they can think of to kind of get them out of that funk?
That's a great question. So first and foremost, you have to like establish your own routine. And so just as that's true with exercise and that's true with sports, it's true with eating, you know, trying to eat healthy stuff, all those things should be part of your ritual. So should kind of self-talk scripts. So that, again, you know that, for example, one class or encountering a certain group of people that occurs typically, you know, within a certain time of the day, you need to kind of like, this is going to be okay. This is how I'm going to manage it. I'm going to think about this instead. So that you're prepared for something rather than, uh-oh, this really is a saber-toothed tiger coming out of the bushes ready to ruin my life for the rest of my days. Not really so likely. In addition to that, you know, we're really trying to like put in place what we call cognitive behavioral therapy as part of just the way that we think and learn growing up. And so it sounds like technical, but it's not. It's just looking at when you have behaviors that are not good for you. You feel frustrated and stressed, so you literally, you overeat or you want to scratch on yourself, you know, things like that. It's like you have to replace those. And so the point is you can't tell people to stop doing something, stop watching television, stop hurting yourself. It's like you have to do something instead. So specifically, if you start to, like, have even like panic anxious kind of feelings. Oh, my God, this is horrible. I can't breathe. I can't think. I think I'm going to get sick. You literally can't sit there sometimes and talk yourself through that, but you can literally hyperextend your fingers, just stretch them as far as you can and count to five, and then let go, or do the same thing with your toes. And that sends a nonverbal signal to the part of your brain that's associated with fear that says, wait a minute, it's not a group of velociraptors outside the door here waiting to devour you, which is what it may feel like, you know, when you're in kind of a stressful time or a stressful circumstance at school or even outside of there. So it's implementing those practices that becomes real important. And a third one, and you guys are the best at this, is social engagement. You know, the first thing to do when you start to feel overwhelmed and stressed is reach out to your allies. You know who your allies, friends are at school and who are people that are less likely that. But getting reality checks from them, evaluating all the evidence with them about what's going on, getting help and support, we can divvy this assignment up, whatever it might be. Those are very productive, helpful, good for your brain, both now and for 40 years from now, tactics to employ, you know, when you're amidst circumstances that may remain stressful.
Since stress is a normal part of life and is even healthy in small amounts, how can a teen know if the amount of stress that they're experiencing is too much and it is too unhealthy?
Yeah, that's a really good question, and you're exactly right. We know that a little bit of stress is good, and we joke sometimes that some people don't have enough stress, they don't worry enough, they blow things off and they don't care. A little bit of stress is a good thing, but when it starts to interfere with sleep, when it starts to interfere with your appetite, when it interferes with you going out, you would rather live in the basement, if you will, playing video games. Our joke is, practice does not make perfect. Practice makes permanent. So you don't want to practice living a life like away from people and in the basement and all that kind of stuff. You want to stay in the game. So the point is, when the stress load starts to get such that it takes you out of the game of life, you withdraw from other people, you're afraid to engage, or you don't enjoy your interactions with other people, that's when you have to take more drastic, dramatic steps to kind of alter that trajectory, because you do not want to basically groom your brain for seeing that's the world that you're going to look for when you're 20 and 30 and 40.
I think during a transition for a lot of teens, moving into high school to college, what are some ways teens can kind of, you know, prepare for that transition, you know, mentally? Because it's a big step up, you know, stress comes at different forms, different factors. What do you suggest for teens kind of prepare themselves?
It's much the same thing. So again, practice makes permanent. So the point is, establish good routines from the time you're like middle school, high school on, and that means sleep, appetite, you know, eat good things if at all possible. Try to preferentially do that. Get in those good patterns. Find exercise you like to do. And this is important. You know, unfortunately, sports get more competitive as you go up the ladder, like as you get to high school and college. Most kids aren't going to go play collegiate level sports. Some of them will, but most of them won't. The point is that it's very helpful to find, for example, a regular way to do exercise, something that you enjoy, so that you will continue doing it until your old age. Because, again, it's brain reparative, but it also keeps your body in good stead. It minimizes your risk for obesity and all that other kind of stuff. So it's only good. So getting those habits going right now is good. For the actual transition, here's what people have found that's really helpful. The people who are most productive and most successful in life, including college, are the ones who, first of all, have, like, actually some semblance of a schedule. They look up and they're like, I'm going to block out time to, like, hang with my friends. I'm going to block out time to exercise. I know when I'm going to be going to class, but it's like, I've got time that, you know, this is when I got to exercise. So they don't make this shift that some high school kids do from basically a school life that's 30 hours a week to a college life that's 15 class hours per week. And they say, well, I got tons of time to take care of all these other things, so I'll worry about that later. It's like, no, you've got to literally build in time to do good things like the exercise stuff and the eating. And in addition to that, I hope you'll like this one, playing music, no whopping surprise, is a great thing for your brain from an early age till you get wicked, wicked, wicked old. And so even if you're not, like, proficient at playing, college is another good time to take up something, even if it's lessons or whatever. Or if you don't like playing music, you can still listen to music. And I apologize, I'm going to sound old here, and I am. But the truth is, yep, the research shows that if you listen to classical music or jazz music, those are probably preferable to rap and seriously hard metal. But now that being said, you can absolutely find Led Zeppelin and Black Sabbath and AC/DC played by the London Philharmonic Orchestra or other such entities. And so specifically, AC/DC, two cellists, like two young guys that everybody should kind of check out. There's like great ways to like include music within your life that also is very good, again, for brain stuff that you want to make sure that you have as you make that transition to college. And this is the biggest thing. You're going to live to be 80, 90, 100 years old based on our current projections. People have so much fear that, oh my goodness, I didn't go to X college or Y college, or I didn't get a this GPA the first semester or whatever, and now my life is over. That's rarely true. That is, you have to not go understanding that you're in like a denser place that's unfamiliar, and sometimes it takes people a little bit longer to adjust. And so you have to give yourself a little bit of latitude, and this is the real important lesson in this. People who survive adversity, who experience failure and embrace it, cherish the defect, look at what's not working well, and then do stuff about that rather than avoid it and try to evade it. That's really the biggest life lesson that I'd wish for anybody to get out of college, is how to go and do things that are not familiar and that may be hard, but with the mindset of, but I'm going to go and learn how to overcome this, whether it's going to talk to the teacher, whether it's talking to other people there, whether it's just figuring it out some way. So if you go with the right mindset about enjoying and appreciating college, but also dealing with adversity more on your own or with a different social group there than using, you know, the people that you may have used in high school, I think it's much easier to make that transition.
Hamilton was adopted from a rescue in 2008. He really likes to be around people. I get out my mat and I'm doing a downward dog and he's underneath. He's quite the pug about town. He gets invited to a lot of parties. He knows he's a pretty big deal. Look at this little face. How could you not love him?
Hamilton the Pug, Instagram star and shelter pet. Amazing adoption stories start in shelters. Visit theshelterpetproject.org to find a pet near you. Brought to you by Maddie's Fund, the Humane Society of the United States, and the Ad Council.
Hey everyone, let's all stop what we're doing and take a moment. You see? Every moment can be kind of special. But they can be loud moments, goofy moments, dorky moments, it doesn't matter. Because every time dads like us take a moment like that to spend with our kids, well, it's pretty momentous. So let's take a moment to make a moment. Call 877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
So for the parents that listen to our podcast, what are some things that they can do to help make sure that their teen doesn't have an unhealthy amount of stress in their lives?
You know, kind of like all the way back from the time they're like three or four, you know, just like anything else around the diet. You don't want to feed them, I apologize with no disrespect to Hostess, Twinkies all the time, right? You want to expose them to quality food. You want their sleep routine to be good. You want their media diet to be a healthy one. So they can do those things right off the bat. They can set rules and parameters. Actually, people do better with structure. And specifically, when you make the world a predictable place, that diminishes your propensity to look for trouble and to have, again, this bias toward the negative. So sitting down and having dinner together, that actually works well. And by that, I mean you actually engage in conversation, not you look at your separate devices or you watch the evening news. And I'll be a jerk for a second. I found it much easier to watch The Daily Show or Saturday Night Live regarding news information rather than trying to watch it, you know, from the conventional sources. And what we do know from media research is that when people watch repetitively traumatic events that have occurred and they keep hoping that they'll see something that will give them clarity and will inoculate them from ever being vulnerable to such an experience in their own area or hometown or whatever, we find that people who watch this stuff repetitively are actually more likely to experience PTSD symptoms than the people who are actually present where the trauma, you know, the catastrophe occurred. So again, parents making sure that there's limited exposure of this stuff and not leaving the news on for their own interest to try to understand something that their kids are exposed to is real important. As you would well surmise, yes, exercise and team sports, engage them with others around musical opportunities, even if they're not going to be a great player. That's not the real value of it. It's great if they turn into a great musician or they make it into the MLB or NFL or NHL. But that's not why you do it. You do it because it's good for the body. So those exposures are really important and good. And, of course, being able to talk about failure. So many kids fear that they're going to disappoint their parents, that they feel like they can't talk about what they're struggling with in an academic circumstance or a social circumstance. And you want to make everything talkable, aboutable, you know, with your kid so that, again, it doesn't feel like problems and failures can't be learn from and resolve. That's, again, that's a real important factor for us, is to be able to like deal, you know, take chances and know that it's okay sometimes when things don't work out as, you know, perfectly, if you will.
All right, Dr. Bostic, any final thoughts for us?
Isn't that enough?
Well, I don't know if you have any more burning questions, any more great metaphors.
Well, so, you know, my big joke with parents is too often they try to protect the children, and that's totally understandable. But the far more useful mantra is kind of like prepare beyond protect. So all the way through, it's good to let kids take some chances. It's good to, like, help them, like, think about how they would solve a problem instead of solve it for them. And that's kind of, like, unfamiliar for many of us in that parenting role. So it really is helpful for teens to be given, like, a little bit of latitude. And this is, I guess, one of the quick helpful things. People don't understand that the teenage brain is different. It is not like a little brain in an adult. It is different in two real cardinal ways. One is you're getting rid of brain cells during adolescence based on what you've needed to be in that environment. So you're going through massive kind of like reorganization and architectural changes. So teenagers are not being mean or difficult. They really, it takes a bit longer to process stuff as this process goes on in the brain. And your emotional centers in your teenage brain are turned up while the logical part of your brain is turned down. So parents have to be mindful that when they're telling you to take the trash out or whatever it might be, they're kind of speaking German and you're hearing French. And so it's different parts of the brain connecting with each person. And so the point of the story is teenagers are emotional more so than they have been previously. And that's a good thing, because when you guys think about who you're attracted to, you don't say, yeah, you know, the person that I'm attracted to is someone that has, you know, a very different temperament than I do. We'd have good-sized children that might be able to play these sports that we like. No one would talk like that. You'd say, I'm attracted to someone because they're hot, right? Or because they're attracted to you physically or whatnot. Or emotionally, you like being around them and there's chemistry. And that's all the emotional part of your brain, which is good. If you didn't have that, you'd probably just want to live with your parents forever. So it's good that the brain changes like that, but it makes it a little bit harder to communicate. And so parents have to be a little bit more patient with teenagers. And the other thing is, we now know there's a part of the brain that gets turned on for this peer pressure part. It's far more important to look good in front of your friends, in fact, go down in a, you know, a blaze of glory doing something foolish, than to say, yeah, I don't think I should do that, or I don't want to take a chance. And again, that abates, that goes away when you get to be about 22 to 25. But again, it's not just kids being rebellious or being difficult. The brain is really primed to help you as a teenager become independent and to separate from your parents. So it's just good for everybody, the parents and kids, to be mindful of that part of the transition that goes on that's biologically built into you. It's not something that's wrong with the parent or the kid.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Bostic. We really appreciate you spending the time to answer our questions.
Great. Good luck with this, and I think it's a great thing that you guys are doing.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, take care now.
All right, so Grace, what do you think could be done to lessen the amount of stress placed on teens?
I think a lot of it has to do with the amount of pressure placed on teens. I think if we all just took a step back and was like, no, you don't have to get a 4.0 to get into a good college. Like, yes, it's great if you're a good athlete, but really you should just be going out there and getting some exercise and having fun. I think if we all just took a step back, removed some of the pressure, and just went into life more of just to have fun, to be happy, and to stop putting so much pressure and stress on teens.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like so many teens are feeling this, you know, self-fulfilling prophecy where they feel like, oh, I'm not going to be able to get into college. I'm not going to be able to play varsity sports, that we just so discourage ourselves to a point where that's just the mindset we're in. I completely agree with you. I feel like so often teens are just placed pressures on them that aren't always, you know, what they want. You know, not all of us have to go to a great college. Not all of us have to get straight A's because we're going other places in life. That's okay. So I think a lot of times it's just pressure that isn't necessary, but stress is stress and it's a factor of life. Sometimes mm-hmm. it's good, sometimes it's bad.
Mm-hmm. It's all about how you deal with it and how you manage it to help keep you healthy.
Exactly. So I think that's where we're going to end this one. I'm Patrick Keefe.
And I'm Grace Leachman.
And thank you for joining us. See you guys next week.